What impresses a king? For that matter, what impresses someone of means who's not part of a royal family? An athlete, for instance, who's set for life with a multi-million-dollar contract. Or a celebrity who is adored by throngs of cheering, screaming fans, not only while performing, but before and after. Or a college-age entrepreneur who transformed a sophomore year sociology class assignment into an app that's had over 4 million downloads and was just purchased by a venture capital company. For a royal who's waited on hand and foot, for an athlete who's pampered in order to protect his physique and talent and skill, for the performer whose name and face are recognized instantly wherever she goes, for that geeky inventor whose ragged jeans and backward ball cap give no indication of his astronomical net worth, for people like that, what catches their attention? What gives them pause? What fills them with awe? How about for the magi of biblical fame, those scholars from the East who were experts in astronomy and astrology, in history and prophecy, open to the guidance of God and the ways of human nature? What about them? Would anything impress such folk? Would anything fill those elite scientist scholars, those magi, those wise men, those kings, would anything give them awe? We all have a sense of what awe is. According to a Berkeley psychologist, awe is the feeling of being in the presence of something vast or beyond human scale, experiencing something that transcends our current understanding of things. Maybe last summer's solar eclipse gave you a sense of the awesomeness of the universe. Maybe you were awestruck the first time you saw the ocean, or the Rockies, or the Alps, or the inside of a real major league ballpark when you're 9 years old. Maybe you were overcome with awe as the doctor explained that first ultrasound image of your baby. You know how they say it's impossible for you to tickle yourself? I'm told that that's true. Let's all try it right now. They say it's impossible to tickle yourself, and I think it's probably just as impossible to create for yourself an experience of awe. You can't plan or make awe. Awe happens. Recent research is suggesting that the sensation of awe should be added to the big six emotions of happiness, sadness, fear, anger, disgust, surprise. It seems that awe is a basic part of being human that we all need. Awe-inspiring experiences bind us together. They enable us to remember or to realize for the first time that we're part of something much larger than ourselves. Awe-inspiring experiences move us, even momentarily, from focusing on me to focusing on me. Awe helps us see things in new ways. When we experience or encounter something awe-inspiring, our innate fight-or-flight response is disabled, allowing us to pause and consider, to imagine, think. So what was it like for the Magi when they found and they looked upon the child Jesus after their long trip? A cynic could claim that maybe they were disappointed. Huh? See it? Pretty ordinary little boy, looks to me. But that's not what Matthew's Gospel tells us. When they found the place where they had been led by the star, Matthew writes this: they could hardly contain themselves. They were in the right place. They had arrived at the right time. Matthew then says that they went into the house and they saw the child in the arms of his mother Mary. And how did they react? Matthew says they were overcome. They were overcome. Beholding Jesus brought them to their knees. Even in his innocence and youth, the child Jesus projected God's providential care, God's unfailing acceptance, God's power above every power. They saw Jesus as awesome. Kneeling before him in humility and honor, they worshiped him, speaking or singing words of praise and thanksgiving and joy. And then out of their bags, they produced treasures truly fit for a king. Frankincense, burned only for occasions of the highest honor. Perfume of myrrh, often used in royal anointment ceremonies, and the treasured element of gold, perhaps in the form of coins or jewelry or ornaments or statuary. These were not prizes. They were not rewards. They were gifts of honor, tributes, offered from one party of dignitaries to another. That's what the Magi did. What do we do? What are we supposed to do with Epiphany, Christianity's peculiarly named tradition commemorating the world's discovery of the Son of God? As I said a moment ago, I don't think it's possible for us to will ourselves to be overcome with awe. Awe is not something we can do. It's something that happens to us. And yet, ponder the significance, the uniqueness of what we've just awaited through Advent, celebrated, Christmas, that God so loved the world that God came among us in Jesus, God's Son, our brother. God reached across the vast and mighty distance between our humble daily lives and God's majestic omnipotence. And God became embodied in our midst in Jesus. Emmanuel, God with us, was born in Bethlehem. Ponder that. Consider that within the incomprehensibly vast universe of God's concern, God opted to invite us to a closer, deeper fellowship by coming to dwell among us. What do? In response to seeing God in flesh, the Magi offered the gifts they had. I think We're called to something remarkable. Called to something more than simply being nice people. More than simply being people who get along with each other. God's action of coming among us in Jesus signals a call to action for us. To show compassion and generosity when others feel that they've done their share. And to stand with people who are being taken advantage of through the greedy or disrespectful actions of others. And to strive for our lifestyles and our attitudes, as well as our words, to attest to our profound gratitude to God as the source of all blessing. Let's take a lesson from the Magi. Overcome by the awesome strength and inclusiveness of God's love for all the world, we too can present ourselves in humble submission before Jesus and offer the gifts of our lives for His use. From us, for God, that would be an awesome response.